My guest this morning was the inaugural winner of the Surrey Hotel's Steve Brawnius Writer's Residency. As a crime reporter, Kelly Dennett had no shortage of stories to write about, but it was the murder and disappearance of teenager Jane Furlong that piqued her interest. The research into the case was enormous and made more challenging as memories had changed and people involved had died. But it resulted in a fresh look at the life of Jane Furlong and the mystery surrounding her death. Journalist and author Kelly Dennett is with us this morning. Tēnā koe, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. It's great to see you on this side of the microphone.
Yes.
It must be weird as a Juno being interviewed.
It's so strange. Yeah, I can have new empathy for some of my interviewees. It's very different.
Well, I promise we're not going to give you too much of a hard time.
Thanks.
Your book is The Short Life and Mysterious Death of Jane Furlong. And I wondered this morning if you could just give us a bit of context, first of all, for people who know that name and maybe remember parts of the case but don't remember all of the detail.
Sure, yes. I was actually quite surprised. A lot of people sort of recognise the name but are a bit fuzzy on the details. So Jane was 17 when she disappeared from Karangahape Road in central Auckland. It was 1993. She had been a sex worker for a couple of years when she disappeared, and for a very long time it was a big mystery. She wasn't seen again. In 2012, just by pure chance, a person walking on the beach in Port Waikato, which is a good long way away from central Auckland, about an hour's drive, found her skeleton in the sand dunes. So the police investigation was renewed with the finding of Jane's body, but still no real answers. The case is still open. Nobody's been charged with her disappearance and murder, and it's one of the country's greatest mysteries.
Yeah. Is that what attracted you to it? Because you were introduced to this from a journalist perspective once the story was renewed, weren't you, in 2012 rather than in 1993?
Yes, I wasn't actually working as a journalist in 2012, but I was always aware of the case. I think my interest was piqued, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, when I met Judith Furlong, which was several years ago, I think it was 2015, met her by pure chance.
That's Jane's mother.
Correct, yeah. Yes, sorry, Jane's mum, Judith. Met her by pure chance, and she's a really interesting person and very warm and is happy to talk about Jane. And so that's when I started to learn a little bit more about the mystery and just thought, this is just so fascinating. I mean, I found Judith really interesting. The whole case, you know, whodunit was interesting. But the more I delved into it, Jane's friends as well, her boyfriend when she went missing, Danny, all such fascinating people. And so I just sort of went down a rabbit warren, really.
Yeah, as you do. What was your impression of Judith? Talk to us a bit more about Judith Furlong, because I mean, that would be obviously just the most awful experience for a mother and a defining experience in someone's life to have lost a daughter when she was just 17 years old.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that was one of my biggest questions as well, was how did Judith cope with all of this? I couldn't imagine losing a daughter and not knowing what happened to her. And Judith is extremely friendly to journalists, and I think she really likes to keep Jane's disappearance and death in the spotlight in the hopes that one day it will be solved. So Judith was always very kind to me and very open as well. There weren't many things that she shied away from, and she very kindly introduced me to a lot of people in Jane's life. And I couldn't have done it without her, really. She granted me access to Jane's diaries. She had, you know, collections of newspapers and reports and documents from the past 25 years. And she's a very warm person, always happy to sit around the table and have a chat over a cup of coffee. So yeah.
It must be quite a sensitive thing, though, to approach a family member of someone who has been murdered in these circumstances.
Yes.
And say, hey, I want to write a book.
Yes. I couldn't imagine being in Judith's position. And I think the best thing, well, what I generally tend to say to people is that I really want to tell your story, your truth as you know it. Mm. And I think if you just promise to do a good job and, you know, take as much care and due diligence as possible, yeah, I hope that it makes it easier for them. It's certainly not an easy process for them to recall, you know, such terrible memories. But Like I say, I think Judith has always been really keen to keep Jane's case in the spotlight and to keep a microscope on it, just to put a bit of pressure on, I guess, the police and the people who know what happened to her. So fortunately, she was very happy to invite me into her life, so to speak.
You obviously won the trust of a lot of people in writing this book. So. And you mentioned Danny, who was Jane Furlong's boyfriend when she disappeared, and for a long time was kind of a suspect, at least in the media's eyes, and had fingers pointed at him. I can imagine he would have been pretty resistant
in
getting involved.
Extremely resistant, and I could totally understand why. I think once he saw that other people were participating, Jane's best friends, Amanda and Carla and Sharon and Jane's mum, Judith, were all on board with it. I think he kind of saw that because everybody else was involved, I was someone who could potentially be trusted.
Mm.
And we had a couple of meetings before we kind of sat down and did, you know, any kind of interview. And so I think I did sort of gradually gain his trust. And I like to think that he liked me and trusted me. And so, yeah, that's how it all started, I guess.
Tell me a little bit about Jane. Because there will be people, I'm sure there are still people listening right now, who hear 17-year-old sex worker and they have preconceptions in their mind that I would hope would be challenged in this day and age. But,
yes.
But you know, that I'm sure people have made up their mind and have always made up their mind about the sort of person Jane was without actually really understanding.
Exactly, yes. And that was at the forefront of my mind when I was undertaking this research, was that Jane was a real person. She had friends and family who loved her. She was a young mother. She'd just given birth to a baby boy when she disappeared. Jane was, by all accounts, extremely intelligent, feisty, outgoing, and really wanted to be somebody and make something of herself. And everybody that I spoke to was just kind of baffled about why she, I guess, had sort of fallen down the wrong path. But everybody that I spoke to was adamant that, you know, she would have grown up to be somebody. She wanted to be all sorts of things. She wanted to be a writer. She wanted to be a psychologist. She had lots of hopes and dreams for the future. And I think she certainly would have had an amazing life if she'd had the chance.
Did you draw parallels with your own experiences with some of the things she had experienced?
I kind of expected to. I mean, when you're a teenager, I guess you experiment with lots of different things. And I know I did in my youth, and my friends did. But I did, you know, get the sense that Jane and I were actually quite different people. And I think I was very lucky to have grown up in a really stable household and didn't know a lot of the problems and challenges that Jane faced. So in many ways, we can relate to Jane's story. You know, she fell in with the wrong crowd. She was experimental in her youth. But, yeah, at the heart of it, she was just a teenage girl, you know, holding her diaries in my hands. It was like, this is a girl who's talking about baking a cake with her mum and watching Twin Peaks and, you know, talking about how annoying her best friend is. And that was just so relatable.
See, that's it, isn't it? It annoys me how when a sex worker is killed or assaulted, there is still that kind of preconception that that somehow their life is worth anything less than my sister or than you or I.
Yes.
And it's actually those little personal things that can remind all of us, if we have those preconceptions, that this person is a human being and this is someone's daughter or someone's sibling, and, you know, actually, 9/10 of their life is just like yours or mine.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It was a different time and, you know, things have moved on so much. In 1993, sex work was illegal and women were afraid to talk about their experiences of sexual assault for fear of not being believed or, you know, for fear of even being arrested in that day. So, yeah, I think I like to think we have a lot more empathy in this day. But certainly, you know, back then there were a lot of journalists who did see that as well and tried to get to the heart of Jane's story and talk to her mum and her friends just like I did. There's been no shortage of people who've tried to understand Jane, which is nice. Yeah.
What was interesting is when I first heard about your project, I kind of assumed that it would be like the classic non-fiction crime story, and that you would work through an unsolved case and try and deduce who the murderer was.
Right.
But actually, this is a much more personal story, and I think it kind of morphed from that, which it would be the kind of atypical way of following something from a journalistic perspective, into much more of a personal journey, eh?
Yes, that's, you've hit the nail on the head, yes. I think I started out with the best of intentions, thinking, you know what, I can totally solve
this. I'll solve the case, yeah.
Leave it to me, guys. But I quickly realised, you know, the police had a lot of challenges, and I can totally relate and understand why that was. And the more I delved into the story, the more I sort of shifted my focus from, well, who killed her, who did this, to, well, who was Jane, and who was her mum, and who were her friends, and how did this all come together, and, you know, where do I fit into this as well? And I like to think that people would kind of follow along with my journey and see the challenges and experience it for themselves in a way.
I'm sure you're asked this all the time. Does that mean you know who killed Jane, or you have a good idea?
I think that, like I said before, this is just a mystery that has totally confounded police detectives for decades. And I like to think that this book has potentially opened, I guess, widened the possibilities. If anything, I've learned there were so many people around Jane who were just dangerous people. And I think rather than narrowing things down, I've kind of explored more possibilities, and I think there'll be a lot of new information there that people won't be aware of.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it jogs somebody's memory, or somebody thinks, well, I had this piece of information, but I didn't think it was relevant because of this, but now I see, you know, that I was wrong about that, and perhaps it can prompt them to come forward to the police, I'll be very happy with that.
Do you think the police did a good job?
I think that the police did the best that they could with the circumstances that they were in. I think at play in this is a lot of loyalties to a lot of people in Jane's life. And, you know, the more time that goes by, you know, the more sort of insurmountable those challenges become. So I have a lot of empathy for the police, and I have no doubt that they did the best that they could, and that they sincerely wanted to find Jane and find out what's happened. And
it can be difficult, can't it, looking at historical crimes through a modern lens?
Yes.
And when you're looking at the police and saying, you know what, well, hang on, you know, would that fly on CSI Miami in 2016? probably not.
Right.
But this was 1993.
Yes.
And it was quite a different time.
Exactly, yeah. One of the things that surprised me was on the night that Jane went missing, her boyfriend Danny reported her missing to the police straight away, but it wasn't until the following Monday that an investigation was really launched and police started looking at it. And that was 5 days later. That was surprising to me. But, you know, I have no doubt that the police involved were very keen to find Jane and to find out what happened. And it's just a shame that all this, these years later, we still don't really have an answer.
Yeah. How has writing this affected you?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't know. I feel very invested in this case, and I feel, I guess, very annoyed that we don't have an answer. But mostly I feel more for Jane's friends and family about what they've gone through. I think about that more than I think about myself. I really hope that they can get the answers that they're looking for because they've all just been so profoundly affected by what's happened. So, yeah, I mean, in the ways that this has affected me, it's just totally not on par in how it's affected your friends and family.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was watching that awful case with the Riverhead Quarry thing this week. And I was talking to my colleague at TVNZ, Paul, who'd been up there and going to court every day for that. And I mean, that was a harrowing case, and you don't want to draw too many comparisons between them. But you know, I can imagine sitting in court day after day as a crime reporter, you hear some pretty harrowing stuff, but you can keep a level of disconnect a lot of the time because actually you're only usually doing the length of a trial on something. You know, you're doing 3 weeks or 4 weeks. But with this, you had to go so much deeper.
Yes.
And so I wondered if that might have some sort of, you know, impact on you.
It's certainly something, I guess as a crime reporter, you know, you're kind of potentially more aware of your personal safety and I think I was more disappointed that I wasn't able to come up with any answers for Jane's friends and family.
What did Jane's mum think? What did Judith think?
I think that she's happy that something is, I guess, put in writing and there's kind of a record of what's happened, and she hopes that maybe something will come of it. So that's the best, yeah, that I could have hoped for, really. She's happy with it.
Yeah. You're a very engaging writer.
Thank you.
You're a really engaging writer. You clearly have a real talent for it. I can see what was the award? The Surrey Hotel Steve Fronius Longest Title in the World Award. But no, that is a great little residency. Yeah, it's a wonderful, great.
Yeah, a lot of people were sort of quite dismissive of it. But look, I had a week off to write a book, and I got lots of pizza and roast chicken at the Surrey Hotel, which is a wonderful residence. So, yeah, I was very grateful to have had that. And I also had the support of Steve as well, who was actually one of the first people to say, oh, you've got to carry on with this. This is a really good project. And up until then, I'd been sort of wondering whether I should quit it. So I was very fortunate to have received that, yes.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, he is himself an amazing crime writer
he
as well.
He is the best, yes.
Oh, he says that about you. Hey, yeah, thank you so much for your time this morning, Kelly. It's really interesting. Kelly's book is The Short Life and Mysterious Death of Jane Furlong. It is available now, and it is a very interesting read indeed. We'll have all the details up on newstalkzb.co.nz.